Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is a regular business meeting for Tuesday, December 9th. The time is just after 7 p.m. Ms. Smith, will you call the roll, please?
Certainly, council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cutaback, Rasmussen, Camp, Davis, Gamble, and Geary.
Thank you. And we have a couple Boy Scouts here today, and I've invited them to come forward and do the Pledge of Allegiance. We'll let the record show that Councilmember Hanford is graciously allowing them to come forward, and we'll go ahead and move him to do the pledge next week.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well done.
All right. The first item that we have on this morning's agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Please note the testimony is limited to 5 minutes per speaker, and we do have some people that have signed up. The first person on the agenda is Mr. Lowell Anderson. Mr. Anderson, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record, please?
Something bad happened here this morning, folks.
There you go.
Lowell Anderson, 129 East Rivermont Drive, Monroe, Washington. And my comments tonight regarding the 43-acre rezone site will include a brief description of limited open space, flooding, and why building in the flood-prone areas have negative consequences, engineering opinions, and tax dollars in 5 minutes or less. Land use element policy LU-1-1.1. Limited open space states in part the designation applies to properties that are so severely impacted by critical areas, including frequently flooded areas, steep slopes, or wetlands, so as to significantly diminish development potential, etc., which is East Monroe. Also, from the land use element states in part eastern city limits, US 2 and Rivermont Ridge, the undeveloped area is subject to local flooding, East Monroe. Additionally, we have testimony from longtime residents and photos of severe flooding. Make no mistake, the property is flood prone, and yet the city staff and Pace Engineering wants to argue this point, which has a huge bearing on the amount of developable area. Next, the effect of building in flood prone areas. The city of Chehalis used the old economic development ploy to build in the floodplain, and like Monroe, fired, terminated, discharged, whatever you want to say, their economic development manager for saying this is a bad idea. They proceeded to build in the floodplain. The flood of 2004 flooded all the new businesses, including Walmart, Home Depot, car dealerships, and others. The flooding was so severe that homes and farms never before flooded were inundated. The flood closed I-5 for several days. I-5 runs from Mexico to Canada. A few quotes from the Seattle Times, comments made by professionals regarding this flood. Mr. Montgomery, the University of Washington scientist, argues that commercial and residential floodplain development ends up costing everybody else. We should not be subsidizing those land uses through flood control measures and rebuilding things and bailouts. He said the question is, why did we build them there in the first place? And that's my question. Why would we build in a flood-prone area here in Monroe in the first place? For Andy McMillan, longtime wetlands manager for the DOV, it's kind of sad we keep repeating the same mistakes even when we know better. Mr. Sokol. The more things you put in the floodplain, the more things at risk. We can never assume we have seen the worst of what nature can do. No one complimented Chehalis for building in the floodplain. For the Herald, a photo of Hamilton flooded by Skagit River in 2003, city may have to move. The Herald, 2014, Stanwood Police Department. The police headquarters, as well as City Hall, lie within a floodplain. The question, floodproofing measures or move to higher ground? The Herald, December 2014. Tribe may head for the hills. Darrington, the Sauk-Suiattle Indian Tribe. Commissioned report completed by June 2014 by Seattle consulting firm Natural Systems Design and recently made public confirms and puts numbers on what the tribe has long suspected. In the coming decades, the magnitude of flooding is expected to increase 50%, while the frequency of flooding will more than double. Our Mr. Hamer pointed this out, along with other pertinent facts, see page 10 from his blue book, which you each have, submitted to council September 16, 2014, titled Reasons to Accept the Growth Management Hearing Board Decision and Take No Further Action. Pace Engineering will undoubtedly come up with a mitigating plan for flooding. Please consider an excerpt from a letter that I asked Mr. Ruth to write for me stating the historical facts and conclusions surrounding the proposed rezone dated October 14, 2013. Mr. Ruth is owner of Ruth Realty and a real estate broker in Monroe, providing residential and commercial development consulting, also a former council member. And I quote in part, a key point in understanding the environmental impact statement and supporting claims of adequate engineering to mitigate the impacts can best be evidenced by some of the wise advice I received many times over the years while a councilman and in real estate development. Engineers theoretically can engineer anything on paper that will actually be built or work is cost effective or even advisable is not a concern of an engineer. For reference, the complete text is part of our document submitted to the hearing examiner October 18, 2013, at item L-11. And finally, we need to stop this dangerous and very expensive precedence of using taxpayer dollars to pay for property owners' environmental impact statement and legal fees. All of this could have been avoided if council had ordered an economic feasibility study prepared by an independent third-party appraiser to show if the site is economically viable. Please vote to take no further action, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
I have money and money in the bank there. See, I'm not done. Blue book.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you.
The next person that we have who has signed up to speak is Kristen Kelly. Ms. Kelly, please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Kristen Kelly, 1429 Avenue D, number 532, Snohomish, Washington, 98290. I'm here. I am Snohomish Skagit Program Director for FutureWise, and I'm Smart Growth Director for Pilchuck Audubon Society. And FutureWise is working throughout Washington State to create livable communities, protect our working farmlands, forests, and waterways, and ensure a better quality of life for present and future generations. We work with communities to implement effective land use planning and policies that prevent waste and stop sprawl, provide efficient transportation choices, create affordable housing and strong local businesses, and ensure healthy natural systems. We are creating a better quality of life for Washington State together. The mission of Pilchuck Audubon Society is to conserve and restore natural ecosystems, focusing on birds and other wildlife for the benefit of the Earth's biological diversity. And the mission of Smart Growth, that is the program that I run for Pilchuck Audubon, works with local governments to achieve more livable, sustainable urban communities that will help protect resource and rural lands, air and water quality, and wildlife habitat through education, outreach, activism, and advocacy on land use planning and development regulations. So now you know who I am and what I do. We are strongly recommending that you do not go forward with using taxpayer dollars for an EIS for a UGA expansion proposal. A great deal of my work centers on county and city comprehensive planning and development regulations that will meet the criteria and goals of the Growth Management Act, the multi-county planning policies, and the Vision 2040. Our recommendations has been and will continue to be to support all three of those goals of those three planning processes. As you probably already know, the county's buildable lands report states that Snohomish County has plenty of available buildable land inside of our cities and our current UGAs to support the population target through 2035. There is no legal reason for the County Council to allow any UGA expansion in the 2015 update, or likely for even the next update. And even the Master Builders Association in public hearing has testified that they agree that that will probably not happen. So without going into a lengthy discussion about all the other environmental reasons for not pursuing this UGA expansion, we recommend that the city abandon this, which will save everybody time and money. In addition, we oppose the city doing yet another EIS for the East Monroe rezone, which we oppose. It has been shown clearly that this land is not suitable for commercial uses, and doing yet another EIS will not change that fact. So thank you for consideration of our recommendation.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Kelly. The next person that we have who signed up to speak is Mr. Douglas Hamer. Mr. Hamer, will you come forward and state your name and address for the record?
Doug Hamer, 21122 Calhoun Road. If a poker player is caught replacing the cards he was dealt with those up his sleeve, does the house simply say, redeal? No. More likely, the player would be kicked out and banned from returning, and it wouldn't matter how long this player had been trying to put together a winning hand. Do any of you really believe the experts behind the 2013 EIS when they told you the most likely development on the East Monroe property without the rezone was a 500-member church, a gym club, and a daycare center, with the same build-out as a big box store in a general commercial zoning, a calculation which allowed Pace to downplay to essentially zero every environmental impact of the rezone? Did you or do you believe the experts when they tell you an air conditioning unit of the size appropriate for a single-family home is what would be commonly found servicing a 130,000 square foot building with 30-foot ceilings? Did you or do you believe the experts when they tell you 6,000 cars a day accessing that property via a roundabout or left-hand turn lanes will have no significant impact on the traffic flow? Did you or do you believe the experts when they swear up and down that according to the latest and greatest technology, blackberry bushes are solid ground? Pace, having designed their 2013 EIS around the property being in the floodplain, is now insisting that it isn't. By doing so, are they not essentially admitting that their original EIS was a farce? Now, how can any of these deceptions be characterized as anything but the kind of cheating I spoke about earlier, replacing the cards in your hand with those up your sleeve? If you can characterize them in a better light, I would love to hear it. No, really, I'd like to know how you characterize them in a way that your conscience allows you to vote for a redeal at all our time and expense. Councilmember Hanford had the sense that something didn't smell right about the cost estimates provided by the staff for continued pursuit of the rezone. Do not the gross inaccuracies in Pace's EIS give off an aroma that you can detect? And if so, why not? At the November 18th council meeting, the church's new legal counsel, Ms. Koloskova, told you that the city had essentially won the growth management board. If that were true, the rezone would not have been invalidated. And I am confident it will remain invalidated because the reality of the property itself does not support the idea of commercial development there. I'm confident because our side has now a lot more experience advocating for that reality. I'm confident because there was a reason for all the camouflage in that 2013 EIS, and I have a very hard time imagining where Pace will be able to go without. I'm especially confident if they really intend to pursue the "it's not in the floodplain" strategy. East Monroe property being in the floodplain is not, first and foremost, a legal issue. It's not a policy issue. It's not an insurance rate issue. It is a public safety issue. Public safety issues need to be based on reality, not the purely political reality provided by a majority vote, but the actual physical reality. And as the first hearings examiner pointed out, the reality is the property has a history of severe flooding. That hearings examiner's sentiment on the issue is why Pace treated it as floodplain in the 2013 EIS. The Growth Management Hearings Board specifically agreed with that sentiment of the hearings examiner. If you give Pace another chance so that all the previous great work
is not wasted, as was Ms. Colas-Corbis. In treaty, the only ones to gain from it will be attorneys. For all the rest of us, it will be a huge waste of time and money. It's fine to simply have a gut feeling about an issue, a sincere belief that guides you through decisions that primarily affect you and how comfortable you are occupying your space in this world. But when you're making policy decisions that affect an entire city, as our elected representatives, you have contracted to observe a higher standard, because we don't have your gut feelings or understand your sincere beliefs the way you do. You've got to help us out. When you remain silent, when you stay out of the conversation concerning all these issues, what fills that void is speculation. And as I am sure you know, the speculation is that your continued support for this rezone has nothing to do with what is best for Monroe and everything to do with some social, political, or religious affiliation you have with the owner, or more specifically, his son, Jack. You can deny it with all the indignation you can muster, but that speculation will continue to grow and flourish unless you replace it with something else. So I plead with you, free yourselves from this cloud and explain your positions on these issues. And something beyond is the color of the map, or just property rights, because you know it is more complicated than that. If you are voting to continue this rezone attempt in order to avoid a feeling of breaking faith with or betrayal of a friend...
Mr. Hamer, I need to ask you to wrap up.
Okay. I know that can be a tough call, but I think you should take the time to consider whether or not in the process you are betraying yourselves. Thank you.
Next person that we have signed up to speak is Dave Demarest. Mr. Demarest, please state your name and address for the record.
My name is David Demarest. My address is 19311, 130th Place, Southeast, Nahomish. Thank you, Mayor Thomas, members of the council. I'm here this evening to offer some comments on your pending discussion regarding the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and your anticipated decision regarding how you proceed forward. At this time, and based on earlier meetings, it seems likely that the majority of four council members will vote to request an extension from the Growth Hearings Board to allow time for further modifications to the EIS in an effort to adequately defend the amendment change in land use designation from limited open space to general commercial. Some of the council members supporting of such a vote have to date indicated they support their position for a variety of reasons, including the following. Councilman Gary has stated repeatedly that he believes more commercially zoned land is good for the city. In essence, as he has said, more red on the map. And I must ask, does it matter that the red not be viable? Councilman Davis has stated he believes the city has an obligation to continue supporting the applicant in their pursuit of this amendment. And I would ask Councilman Davis, does the perceived obligation have no cost limits? Councilman Camp has stated that he wants to see this process come to a close, but based on his comments, it seems he wants someone else, presumably the Growth Hearings Board, to make the decision for the city. And with all due respect, Jim, is not that the sort of decision that you were elected to make? Councilman Hanford, you were one of the four that voted to move forward, seemed to be heading in the direction of voting to move forward. I'm not sure why, and so I don't have a comment for you, but I appreciate your thoughts and look forward to hearing more. In the discussion by the council members that is sure to come, I would like to challenge each of you that are choosing to support this to explain above and beyond what you've already said as to why you believe that this is important, why you believe that this should be done, and more specifically, on why it's a wise choice in the best interest of the city of Monroe and its taxpayers. It seems we still don't have any real idea what this continued effort will cost. We don't really know how the staffing will be handled, and we don't know how the effort will be funded. There's no certainty that the effort will once again fail. And even if it's successful, there's no proposal for how or when the property might be used and how the taxpayers of Monroe will ultimately benefit given the expenditure of taxpayer dollars. As a property owner and taxpayer in the city of Monroe, and if the action of October 14 is rescinded, I encourage you to vote for option A of the staff report, effectively affirming the vote of October 14th, advising the Growth Hearings Board that the city will comply with their final decision and order and will no longer pursue the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment or rezone. Thank you.
That's all the individuals who have signed up to speak in advance of the meeting. Are there any other members of the public that would like to come forward to speak? Yes, ma'am. Please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Sorry, I'm at 3216. 08 Calhoun Road. I'm right above the driveway there that's involved in the area. I've been there since 1968. I have seen that river come in there 8 or 9 times, and it has covered the whole area from the bluff way on across, full of water. And it is a floodplain. It is limited open space. It's not a place for commercial development. It is what it is. There's ponds. It gets marshy. It's swampy. Every winter, it's swampy. The drainage, there's the creek comes under the river, under the road, swings around, all the bluffs, swings around, falls around, the bluff goes back into the river. And there's a drainage creek, and it comes down from up above the reptile zoo. There's a regular creek that flows down and flows across the fields, and it goes into the river on the other side. Several drainage ditches down there. It's just a tiny simple turn wetlands in that area. There's no place for fail or anything like that. It is what it is. None of it's an open space.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak on any topic related to the City of Monroe? Yes, sir. Please state your name and address for the record.
I'm Steve Jensen, 17041 155th Street Southeast here in Monroe. I am a member of the Planning Commission, but I'm not here under that role. I'm just here as a private citizen. We just heard a fascinating eyewitness testimony of the fact that that place floods. FEMA may have a definition of a floodplain, but definition or not, that place gets water all over it. So we can't just depend on FEMA's definition. I don't have exact dates, but you'll get to just what I'm trying to say here. Over the course of votes in September to discontinue pursuing, then rescind that in October, and then now it's time like trying to proceed again. Some of the comments that have come out, when it was first voted in September, it was not a full council vote. And, Councilman Gehring was saying he wanted a full council vote, wanted it to be a council decision. So, of course, it was revoted. And then, yet the last meeting in November, there was comments about, oh, it shouldn't be our decision, it shouldn't be the hearing board's decision. Let's push it off to them to decide, well, what happened to this being the council decision, not the hearing board's decision. I think you should make the decision yourself. Look at the result, look at the EIS, look at what we're faced with, and just make the decision before the hearing board makes it for you. What's the purpose of an EIS? I mean, do you just do it to show what the mitigations are? You can mitigate anything with enough money and enough time and effort. I think what you're supposed to do is look at an EIS and say, do we want to support those kinds of mitigations to make this work? I think you have that right and that obligation to say this EIS shows that we don't want to have these mitigations take place on whatever site the EIS be applied to. It's not just a box you check, oh, did an EIS, now move on. You actually need to consider what the EIS is telling you. Finally, it seems like a question has not been properly asked or properly answered. You've all heard the question, you hear it again tonight. How is this good for the city? And the answer that seems to come up is, well, it paints more red spaces on the map. Unfortunately, many of you have been mishearing the question, and so you've been given the wrong answer. Giving the wrong answer. The actual question is, how is this particular spot becoming commercial a benefit to the city? There are a number of places that could become commercial that probably haven't even been considered yet, haven't even talked about, but they're potential. There's space over in West Monroe where a lot of housing is going up. There's still a number of open space out there that right next to the highway or very close to it. It could make good commercial space. There's a spot of land there behind Monroe and Galaxy in the corner there I don't think is commercial yet. It could be commercial. What about the airport? As plans for the next comp plan come about, there's certainly opportunities if the, you know, the economy doesn't allow the airport business to pick up. There's certainly opportunities. That could become a huge commercial area. All three of these that I've mentioned would certainly be easier, less expensive, less controversial. Even the airport would be less controversial. And we paint a whole bunch of red on the map. So again, I ask you to really do your job and answer the question, how is this spot in Eastern Grove becoming commercial a benefit to the city as opposed to anywhere else that might become commercial? And I hope that it is something you can discuss. There's been times after public comments, the council goes off to executive session, comes back, and just votes. And there's no public discussion. So I would ask that this question be asked. How is this spot changing to commercial a benefit to the city? I'd love to hear answers as to how it is. If you can't answer that, and that question should have been answered last before the initial rezone was even voted. If you can't answer it now, you couldn't answer it back in December, shouldn't be continuing this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public that would like to come forward to speak? Anybody? Okay. We're going to now move on to unfinished business. I'm sorry. Let's move on to consent. I'd already scrolled down on the screen. Sorry, everybody. We're on consent agenda now. Councilmember Gehring.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay. I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, and I have a second from Councilmember Cutaback. Any discussion on the motion? Yeah, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. The next item on our agenda is unfinished business. This is number one, AB 14170 East Monroe, rescission of 10-14-14 action and new action regarding Growth Management Hearings Board compliance extension request. And Brad, is this you?
The Growth Management Hearings Board had issued a final decision and order regarding the East Monroe Council's plan amendment to the rezone on August 26, 2014, which found the ordinances to be invalid due to inadequate environmental impact statement. Council has considered this several times, most recently on November 18th. The council has a motion to direct the staff and the mayor to contact the Growth Management Hearings Board to indicate the decision of the council not to pursue this issue any further. Since then, that resolution has been voted on by the council, which was failed to pass, and then a notice was made by Councilmember Hanford to place on the agenda the rescission of the original motion. That is before you today. One clarification for action option A, there is a set of quotation marks missing. So after rescinding the City Council's October 14, 2014 vote 2, there should be a quotation mark because that is the motion that was made on October 14th. I think I said the wrong date earlier, sorry, October 14th. Everything after that vote 2 is actually quoting the original motion. It is not the intent of that motion to say that the Council no longer desires to continue with the rezone, because it is rescinding that motion. And then also there is, if the council wishes, there are two other motions to follow that. One is to comply with the final decision order of the Growth Management Hearings Board by authorizing the mayor to take all appropriate action and necessary steps to revise the final environmental impact statement and process the proposed East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and rezone, and then also to request a extension from the Growth Management Hearings Board for 6 months. Any questions that we have to answer?
Okay. Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, I'd like to, I move to rescind the City Council's October 14th, 2014 vote, quote, to comply with the final decision and order of the Growth Management Hearings Board and authorize the mayor to take all appropriate and necessary action to convey to the Growth Management Hearings Board the city's intention to no longer pursue the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment or rezone, end quote.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Gehring. Before we move forward, Councilman Hanford, did you have anything else that you have before?
Yeah, sure. Yes. I feel like we've talked about this over and over. I don't know how else to answer the questions that have been brought forth tonight. In my mind, it's a property rights issue. The applicant will have to jump through all sorts of hoops and will have to comply to develop that land down the road. That's not what we're doing right now. We are, as has been talked about before, changing the color on the map and increasing our commercial land. It's the right thing to do for the applicant. If I were in the applicant's shoes, I would want the same thing done for me. If I've spent money, I've applied, I've done everything that I was told to do, I would expect and hope that the city would do what we're going to hopefully do. I was, as far as passing it off to the hearings board decision, to make the decision, that was never in my mind. We're here to make the decision, but I think the point we were trying to make, at least in my mind, was that we'll make our decision, and ultimately all we can do is propose that information to the hearings board, and they will have to make their decision as well. It's not like we have the only decision, and it's a done deal. So in my mind, we weren't kicking the responsibility to somebody else and not doing what we have been elected to do. I've met with people that have spoke tonight at coffee shops, restaurants. The first time I met Pastor Minnick and stepped foot in his church to meet with him was a few weeks ago. That was the first time I've spoken with him in person and seen and even stepped foot in his church. So the mystery, the conspiracy theories about this unholy alliance with whoever is just ridiculous. So I feel like I've heard both sides from everyone that needs to share, and I'm ready to make the decision and move on with a clear conscience, knowing that I'm doing what's in the best interest of the city and for the applicant who has been paying the city and following all the guidelines. That's it.
Thank you, Councilmember Hanford. Councilmember Gehring, and then Councilmember Gamble.
Thank you, Mayor, for recognizing me. Councilmember Hanford, I appreciate those comments. I agree wholeheartedly. The question has been asked many times and answered as to why in that particular area. It was answered last year. There was a concept of the gateway process was talked ad nauseum last year. It's an entrance into the city and what could be done potentially on each of the different corners. We heard we have a recommendation to not pursue the Southwest UGA. That is also a gateway into the city. East Monroe is one, as is the horrific, ugly, old brick building that you see on the west entrance into town. So lots of discussion as to why that piece of land in the past. It's been discussed over and over. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear. That definitely had been asked before. Otherwise, I'm absolutely in agreement with Councilmember Hanford, and we need to move forward. I'm in support of the motion. Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, basically, I know we've all kind of stated our opinion. I guess I just go back to the October 14th meeting when we voted 5-2 Then the reason why we voted 5-2, because we were presented with a $135,000 to $195,000 burden to us. It's to go forward. And whether I agree with Pastor Minnick and his church on whether or not he should be able to go forward with that, I've got to make a decision on whether or not we have the finances in 2015 to do that. Sometimes you go through the process and the answer is no. That's just, you know, what it is, whether we like it or not. I really don't see between October 14th and now where it's really changed on, because I guess the other thing we're going to have to talk about if this goes through is we're being presented with the final budget tonight. I don't know how we approve a final budget when right now, from what I see, there's about $92,000 that's we don't have in the budget. And that's the first, and then there's $50,000 to $110,000 if it is. I guess there's a lot of ifs in that because we would have to get the extension, and then if you know it went through, then if it was appealed again, that there's another cost estimate of $50,000 to $110,000. That's from the November. It's either the 4th or the 18th. I wrote both dates down. So then the question to me comes: benefit to the city. I don't disagree from a, you know, I'm a businessman as far as the commercial stuff is concerned, but I don't see where that is now. I mean, if I'm, we've been very fiscally conservative as a council and done a good job on getting us back on our feet, in my opinion, something I think we're all very proud of. And I just don't know how this is in concert with that effort. And that's why I was so supportive of our vote on the 14th. Is the spot a benefit to the city? It's a great question. For me personally, I've, you know, if you want me to answer that, I see that, yeah, from a commercial perspective, it could be when the bypass goes in. That's where I see the real, where that risk-reward might be worth, you know, looking into that, because truly then you would have a bypass that would bypass our downtown, and then people would potentially be less likely. We've seen it time and time again with different cities that have had bypasses go around them, main thoroughfares go around them, where then, yeah, there may be a direct benefit to the city right away. I'm putting that in. But I just, in any of the planning, whether it's state or otherwise, that's just not happening anytime soon. So I'm having a hard time digesting $92,000 tab on the front with potential for more for a 2015 budget. I'm not saying that there isn't potential there eventually, but I just don't see it for 2015, and there's nothing to stop the applicant from coming back. I know that's not what they want. I know that. But so I don't see any reason to change my positions, because to me the numbers really haven't changed from when we, a majority, voted in that direction. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, is there any other discussion on the motion? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. You know, completely agree. I've maintained throughout this whole process, through all the discussions, the cost just doesn't make sense. You know, we've talked costs, we've talked property rates, we've talked this, we've talked that. Ultimately, what it comes down to for me, again, as I've continued to say, is cost and the benefit that we actually get out of it, which is, in my mind, none. Zero benefit out of this. You know, and I've looked at this, I've you know, tried to go back through and see if there's anything remotely close that we've had discussions on this year, council's had discussions on last year outside of this. And really there's not. You know, there's never been a non-project rezone that I could find, and in previous discussions that have ever really come up that we've really discussed. The big puzzle for me right now is, to Councilmember Gamble's point, to reiterate, October 14th, and we were presented the numbers, it was voted to stop at 5-2. Numbers have not changed. And where the numbers are going, where the cost is going, yeah, sure, it has changed. You know, that piece has. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the reality is that the it's still a huge burden on taxpayer dollars with no benefit to the city. we're looking at potentially, again, spending $100,000, which we don't have budget for. As I'm going through and looking at other stuff that we've discussed, matters that we've discussed, and I came across Music Fest. Now, granted, they are two different animals, don't get me wrong here, but the reality is, this whole council eventually balked at spending $65,000 for a concert at the park that would have some shred of benefit to our community. But yet, what appears to be is that we're okay spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on a non-project land rezone that, again, I don't feel has benefit. That truly bothers me as well. I've heard no explanation, no reasoning why the sudden change from October 14th to now. And I would be very interested to hear that, because, again, in my mind, nothing's really changed. If this does go through, as I know many anticipate it does, the other piece to this that we have to realize, and I know council does realize this, is the city is very limited on time. In the packet, there is an option to ask for an extension to the board. My opinion on that is my gut tells me that we probably don't have a good likelihood of having an extension granted. My reasoning in that is I realize that the board, humans, and humans do have emotion, even though that we, them like us, we look at the facts and we make a very unbiased decision based off of those facts. Occasionally, it's human nature. Emotion can come into play. Okay? If you look at the decision from the board that the board issued, okay, right there in the background, they make comments to the fact how the city terminated a hearing examiner, and they also make comment to the special meeting that was held on December 26, 2013. Had zero impact or zero reference in their final decisions, but it kind of makes me wonder, there was a little bit of an emotional piece that may have had an impact on their decision. My concern is that if this does move forward and a request for an extension is asked, they're going to look at our most recent track record, if you will, and see the fact that something was up there, 3-3 tie, it gets broken by the mayor, rescinded. More discussion ensues. One vote goes one way, 5-2 on October 14th. Suddenly we're discussing another rescission. It's all this is perfectly fine, perfectly legal protocol, all that, that's fine. But it kind of makes me wonder and has some concern with me that when the Growth Management Board looks at our request for extension, if it does go that far, that might play in some of their decision. I trust that they're going to look at the facts only, but again, they are human just like the rest of us. So, keep that in mind as we're having this discussion, that we're running out of time. It's very unlikely that, in my opinion, that an extension would be granted, but in the end, it's not cost prohibitive. It's not cost effective. It just isn't. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer dollars for, as it's been commonly called, changing the color on a map, when we wouldn't even support $65,000 for a fun event that actually benefits our community. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Councilmember Cutterback, and then I have Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Cutterback.
So I've spoken quite a bit on this over the last few months, so I'm sure most people know how I feel about the issue. I truly do believe that rescinding the vote, the 5-2 vote from October 14th tonight, would be a huge mistake. I think that vote was made for all the right reasons. And having a landowner come forward after that vote was taken to then offer to pay for an EIS, and then us changing our mind, I think that's a very bad precedent. I also think that it's not just about who pays for the EIS. You know, we talked about the cost. It's not just the EIS payment. It's also the staff time and resources that we're putting forward for a piece of property that many people, and Councilmember Gehring said this months and months ago, that probably has little or no chance of development. And we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to change the color of a map with no clear benefit to the city in any foreseeable future, all in the name of property rights. And that's what I've heard from a couple council members up here, that this is a property rights issue. And I don't see it. The property owner has had their day in court. They have had, again, I've sat on this council for the last 5 years. This has been an ongoing issue. I know it's been an issue way before that. They've had their day in court. They've had access. They've presented their case. We need to move on as a city. We have given their property, you know, its due. They've come forward, and we've wasted so much time and energy on this. And I heard from another council member that they finally want it to be finished, move on from it. That's what the vote did on October 14th. It finally allowed us to move on from this and focus on other projects and other things that I think all of us agree are very important, and that is finishing up Kelsey, focusing on more residential development, maybe finally putting some attention and time and resources to the downtown versus spending time on a piece of property that, again, changing the color of a map. I can't believe that we as a council or as a city would spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to change the color of a map. So I hope that council, you know, has had time over the last couple months and our last couple weeks and have talked to numerous people. I've talked to numerous residents who have said that they are not in favor of going forward on them. And I just find it interesting that when we talked about term limits a couple of weeks ago, council brought up, you know, the thoughts that, hey, we're not into maybe looking at, you know, rescinding that ordinance because, you know, the advisory vote was in favor of term limits. And here you've had tons of emails, I've had phone calls, we've had numerous people come before council and say they do not want us to move forward, but somehow that doesn't seem to weigh as heavy in people's mind, that that's not enough weight to not move forward. So I find that interesting. I also find it interesting that, you know, comments were made that the staff's information that they presented that something didn't smell right, and this is a staff that, you know, presented numbers that maybe people didn't necessarily agree with, but they have done an excellent job through this whole process, and many of you have commented on the excellent job they've done. And then when they present information that doesn't necessarily go with the way that maybe you think it should, then it smells bad or it doesn't seem right. And I think that's a bad way to make a decision. I think that's a bad way to make a decision. So my hope is that we do not rescind this motion, and I think the motion that we made on October 15th, which was a 5-2 vote, was made for the right reason. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis?
Yeah. I said it before. I'll repeat myself on some of this. But this issue was settled. It was done. They had their day, and the zone was changed last year. It was a done deal. So here we are back at it again. Why? Because it was brought back up. It was taken to the the board, and their decision was not, no, you can't do that. It was that we've got a few issues with things. Basically, what that's saying is, if you can fix these issues, then we can allow this. But if you don't meet the requirement that we've got, then you can't. That's where we're at here. And what we're doing is we're not talking about building anything. That's putting the cart before the horse. We're talking about a zoning change, and only a zoning change. Nobody's talking about building anything. A zoning change will give the owner, the property owner, the ability to look into building things there or building beyond what they can presently do. I think that's the property owner's right, and you want to talk about property rights, that's part of it. I think every property owner in the city of Monroe has that right. That property owner has done everything that we've asked him, and then more than any applicant I've heard of. And I don't think we should just cut and run on this because somebody has made enough noise or found a way to bring this back in and stop it. Basically, what you're saying is if we run into too much trouble, then we should just cut and run. I don't agree with that. Yes, I do have a limit. I don't think we're there yet. And what helps that? Another point or question that was asked, what changed? Well, the applicant has stepped up and said, I will cover the cost of that. That's huge. That's a big difference from where we were in the last vote. It was a high cost. It was going to be a high cost, but they're willing to meet that cost. So yes, we have staff time. Basically, staff time for the city is a cost of doing business for the city, as I see it. That's what we're here for. That's what we hire staff to do. That's what they've come to work to do on a daily basis. I don't think that cost is that egregious to pull the plug on this. And not all decisions that I make are in the best interest of Monroe all the time. And I cite the traffic light situation. Numbers wise, that was good for Monroe. Revenue was increased. Speeding was reduced. The police department appreciated the work that was doing. But that's not what the people of Monroe were interested in happening, myself included. I mean, when I ran for this council position, one of my campaign points was I was against the cameras. And we all made that decision to remove those cameras. Actually, in the best interest of the city, the cameras were. But we made the decision to go against that. So we don't make all our decisions based on dollars and cents and what we perceive to be what's good for the city and only the city. What's good for the citizens of the city, or even a citizen who's applying for a rezone, is good for the city too. That they are citizens of this city. We are elected to represent them as well as the other side. And that's where I'm at on this. I believe that the applicant has done due diligence and then some. I think that was proved out last year when the council made the decision to change the zone. We're back at this not because of our decision or lack of decision, but because an outside board has stepped in and made some changes or required more work from us. I think we should go ahead and finish that work and see where it goes. There is no guarantee. We don't know what the board is going to decide. But we do know if we don't go back to the board, the decision is already made. I'm willing to go forward with this, take it to the board, and then let the board make their decision. That's my decision. I'm not passing the buck to them. I'm making the decision now. My decision will be to send it to the board for further review.
Thank you. Councilmember Kemp.
Thank you. All the points I was planning on making have been made. I have had a chance to discuss with several people in Monroe. And the most common question I've had is it over? Has it been settled? Is there an answer? Which I think is what I want, an answer, whether or not it is rezonable or not. And that goes to the Growth Management Board for their decision. And that's why I think we should continue forward and finish this. Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion? Okay, seeing none, there is a motion on the table to rescind. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes 4-3. The nays were Councilmember Cuddeback, Councilmember Rasmussen, and Councilmember Gamble. Councilmember Hanford?
Yes, I'll go on to option B. Move to comply with the final decision and order of the Growth Management Hearings Board and authorize the mayor to take all appropriate necessary action to revise the final environmental impact statement and process the proposed East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and Rezone.
Second. I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Gehring. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Cuddeback.
So a question about that motion. When it says that authorize the mayor to take all appropriate necessary action to revise the final EIS, where does it state that the EIS is being paid for from the landowner, or that it's not? We need to put that anywhere to make it clear that we're not necessarily revising it. We're someone else is doing the work, and we're then reviewing it.
I'd like to defer to either Mr. Feilberg or our attorney.
I think that's really up to the discretion of the council. You could add that. Make an amendment.
Yeah, well, I'm not voting for this motion, but I would
amend it just for you.
I think it should be amended to say something, and I don't know the exact wording that we need, but to make it clear that the landowner has the responsibility of paying for the EIS. And you're the maker of the motion?
Yeah, I got my light on.
Okay, just a second. I believe Mr. Feilberg is writing. I know he's writing because I can see it. He's since there's a motion on the floor, this would be an amendment to that motion.
It needs to be made by one of the council members.
It would be made by any one of the council members, not necessarily one of the two that made the motion. The suggested language from staff and our attorney would be at the expense of the applicant, and so the motion reads right now, comply with the final decision and order of the Growth Management Hearings Board and authorize the mayor to take all appropriate and necessary action to revise the final environmental impact statement. And reading this, it would sound as if that would be a comma, which is to be at the expense of the applicant, comma, and process the proposed East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment.
So I'll make that amendment.
So I have a motion to amend the motion as I just stated from Councilmember Cuddeback. Is there a second?
Second.
I have a second from Councilmember Camp. We're now going to, is there any discussion on the amendment? there are lights here. I'm assuming this is for the parent amendment. I mean, for the original motion. Put your hand up if you want to say anything about the amendment. Okay, Councilmember Guerin.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We that's already well known. I don't believe that we need to include that here, but it's been forwarded and seconded. So we already have documentation. We have prices that have been laid out. Majority. So I'll just leave it at that. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody else hand up that wants Councilmember Campbell?
I would feel more comfortable if it were included in the amendment.
Very good.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? Again, hand up. Just a second. Okay. So we'll stick with what. All right. Okay, so there is a first and a second to amend the motion. I see no other hands to discuss the amendment. All those in favor of amending the motion as stated, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the motion passes 6-1 with Councilmember Gehring voting against. All right, we're back up to the parent motion, which is A, with this amendment. I'm going to give to you to give to Liz. All right, this is now discussion on the motion, and I have Councilmember Gamble next. Councilmember Gamble? Actually, so, Councilmember Cutback, you have the floor. Did you have anything else?
No. Okay.
Councilmember Gamble.
It's a question. Isn't the action options, action B, the execution of this action is predicated on a successful extension from the Growth Board. Is that not correct, based off of all of the information I've seen in past packets?
Would you yield for a comment?
Sure.
Yeah. That appropriate and necessary action is what C is, and we were given specific legal advice that we would need to do C if we were going to move forward. So we have to. That's part of what taking appropriate and necessary action. So that's why B would be before C.
I would want that spell. I mean, I'm not going to vote for it anyway. But appropriate. But the way that appropriate and necessary action is spelled out.
It's supposed to be is left that way so that there's flexibility.
Yeah, but the way that we've been talking about appropriate and necessary action has been doing all things to make the EIS to meet that. So if I see a conflict there. I don't see it referencing C.
It's
the action.
Okay.
Does that make sense? I get Councilmember Gehring's opinion.
So what I'm understanding is that if motion B passes and motion C passes, that to implement motion B will necessitate the attorney requesting an extension of the Growth Management Hearings Board, and that based on previous conversations, I would understand that while the property owner may proceed with doing the environmental work, that all of that is predicated on whether or not the extension is in fact granted. Does that make sense? So if I'm not mistaken, that would mean that if the property owner decided to proceed with the EIS, they would do so at their own risk until the Growth Management Hearings Board made a decision on the extension. Is that correct?
So for the record, if the extension is denied, it's done.
Yes.
That's what I wanted on the record. Thanks.
No.
That's not what the motion says.
No, the motion doesn't need to say that. That's the process of what would happen. Well,
I'd
like staff and our attorney to chime in if the. Okay, again, we're on B right now, but C is the natural direction that would then be passed. So with C then, if the Growth Management Hearings Board denies the extension request, the question then is the matter closed? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good question.
There's still something due on the
21st of February.
23rd. Growth Hearing Board, we got to give them something on the 23rd of February.
Right.
Then I would recommend that B would be amended to include the language that was voted on October 14th, that if the extension is not granted, that we would comply and take no further action to be delivered on the 21st.
Is that an amendment to the motion?
Well, that's what we're all saying. Is that not what you're saying, Kurt? You can respond.
No,
I'll yield for a question.
You want to make the motion to amend?
You should.
No, I'll make the motion, sure. To the B.
To the
subsection.
He's amending B. He wants to add extra text.
Okay.
Based off of the conversation we just had, which is...
So what you need is a second to that motion.
That's correct.
I'll second. But I want to speak on it.
Okay. So I have a motion to amend B and a second. And that motion to amend B and the second would be, as I understood it, that in the event that the extension is denied by the Growth Management Hearings Board, that the mayor would then be directed to take all appropriate and necessary action to convey to the Growth Management Hearings Board the city's intention to no longer pursue the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment or rezone.
Correct.
Which is the language from October 14th.
That's correct.
Okay. So I have a first and a second. Again, I do have lights for the parent motion, so please put your hands up if you have any discussion for this amendment to the motion. Councilmember Cutaback.
So I seconded, but I just want to... say for sure, I agree with that. I think it needs to be clear because if they don't grant an extension, there's still that February 23rd date. Just because they don't grant an extension doesn't mean that we can't, but I believe that the staff would have an incredibly difficult time doing all the work without mm-hmm. that extension. That's what we've been told numerous mm-hmm. times. So I would like it to be clear in there just to make sure that if that extension is not granted, then we comply and say we are not intending to pursue it, so it ends at that time. So you don't have that looming February, I believe it was 23rd, I believe it was my first date, or then it is done at the time that we don't get an extension. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you.
On the amendment.
I'm just curious, so was I coming soon? Okay, I've got it. So if the February 23rd, if this amendment is not accepted, and if February 23rd comes along, and obviously we would not be able to complete everything, we would not be able to give a product to the Growth Management Board, what would be the effect?
The effect would be that essentially the board could find continuing noncompliance and continuing invalidity. Of the ordinance.
So it would be over. Would that be the same
right.
impact?
They would not rescind invalidity, essentially. And so they would remain invalid for a period of time. And the board historically then does give a certain amount of time mm-hmm. for compliance.
But would the effect be the same? That's what I'm asking. So if the way I'm understanding the amendment, if we do not get the extension, it's over. Correct. Mm-hmm. If we do not get...
For specific language to that point, that's what the amendment is.
That's what I'm asking. So if the amendment is not accepted, the effect would be the same on February 23rd if a product is not returned, is not given to them.
We'd have to go to the Growth Management Hearing Board and say we haven't done anything yet, we're working on it, or whatever the status is, and they'd make a decision about what to do next.
Okay.
They would either say that we have complied, which obviously we wouldn't have at that point, or they would then say we're continuing non-compliant, they would enter an order to that effect,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps would give us additional time to comply.
So if they rejected the extension, we didn't have a product to give them on February 23rd, they may give us an extension to continue.
They can give an extension to continue at that point. that happened in numerous cases.
Okay, so I guess I'm somewhat confused as whether or not the impact could conceivably be the same. Well, may not be the same if we don't have the product on the 23rd without this amendment.
You could end up having You're saying the effect could be that the board could grant an extension at that time.
Right.
That's possible. It's possible.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, I won't be voting in favor of that because the whole point of this is to let them comply with the hearings board. And so why would we say only if they give them an extension before February 20, whatever the date is, they may want to give it to them at that date. I don't care necessarily when they give it that to them, but it doesn't make sense to me why we would add that in there. But thank you.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Okay, we have a motion to him. Yes. Okay.
Never mind.
All right. We have a motion to amend the motion. We have a second to amend the motion. We will now vote. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Motion fails. 3-4, with those voting against being Councilmember Hanford, Councilmember Kant, Councilmember Davis, and Councilmember Gehring. Okay, we're back up to the parent motion B, as amended earlier. Councilmember Gehring.
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the motion as amended? All right, seeing none, we're now Councilmember Gamble.
I would just reflect, I realize that amendment just went, but during that discussion there was general consensus that if the extension is unsuccessful that it dies. Those were the statements. Okay, thanks.
Councilmember Cutaback.
Well, and I'll just point out if they don't give us a 6-month extension and then the February 23rd date comes, I find it unlikely. I mean, I know there's a chance, and I know you have to say that, but it's unlikely then that they would grant us an extension at February 23rd. So I think putting in the words, the amendment, makes it clearer. So I know that's dealing with the amendment.
Very good. Okay. So council has stated that if the extension is not granted, that the issue dies before the Growth Management Hearings Board. In order for the council to elect not to proceed, according to Zach, we would still need to adopt a resolution. Right. So to be clear, while I'm understanding your statements may be related to your perception of how council was just discussing the matter, there would still be another instrument that would come before council, as I understand it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any more discussion on motion for B as amended? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes with those voting in opposition being Councilmember Cutaback, Rasmussen, and Gamble. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, I move to authorize and direct the city attorney to request an extension of the Growth Management Hearings Board's compliance deadline in case number 14-3-0006C. By an additional period of up to 6 months, and to take all necessary and appropriate measures related to this action.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Gehring. Now it's time for discussion on the motion. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Brad, just out of curiosity for ballpark figure, if the city requests an extension to the board, how long does it take for them to respond typically on something like this?
Or turning my attention on that. Zach said 2 to 3 weeks, but it might be a little longer since the holidays coming up, and I don't know if we're going to meet before the end of the year again. So,
I agree.
So potentially, we may not hear anything back until after the first of the year. Okay.
Councilmember Gehring?
Thank you. I guess from a staff question, it would be my intent in supporting this that we. Make sure that the city attorney is aware of this. Why we have city attorney here tonight, but aware tomorrow that this is done immediately, tomorrow. And if we need to add that as well, we can add that to the motion. But otherwise, that would certainly be my intent in supporting this, that we're not waiting a week before we let them know. Right. So.
It was indicated there'd be 2 to 3 days to write the brief.
Very good. That's good. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Any other discussion on motion C? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-3, with those voting against being Councilmembers Cuddeback, Rasmussen, and Gamble. Okay, we will now move on to the next item in our agenda, and that item is under new business. This is AB 14171, 2015 fees presentation, and we are going to wait about 30 seconds or so. We're going to go ahead and continue now. We are on new business again, number one. This is the 2015 fees presentation. And Diane, is this you? I'm sorry, Brad.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, you are filling in. Thank you.
Annually review the fees resolution at the end of each year for the update beginning the first of the next year. This has been reviewed by department heads, and we've had a few changes. One thing we changed is the transportation impact fees, which per the Monroe Municipal Code are reviewed each year annually and increased by the Washington State Department of Transportation's Construction Cost Index, which this year happened to be 28%. Building fees were slightly adjusted to recover costs better for the building department for the work that they do to compensate staff for their time in issuing temporary certificates of occupancy and other housekeeping items that they've done. And then the municipal court fees were added since we now have a municipal court. And the finance has done the increase that we talked about when we went over the budget, the 4.4% increase for water rates and the 14% increase for sewer rates. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Brad. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. So I'm looking at the page 5 change on our cover sheet. The scaled cost of certificates. I guess I'd like to get a little bit more background on why the decision to increase by 100. I can think of, you know, someone who maybe runs into some delays or some hard time that's very legitimate, and I understand, you know, trying to get a contractor to finish more readily, but as I read this, this could affect someone building a house. Funding, I mean, there could be a very legitimate reason it would expire and they would have to get another one, and why are we going to charge them an extra $100, $200 instead of $100 the second time for something that could be quite legitimate? At least as I read this, I saw that, and that raised some concern for me. So, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, but...
It doesn't cut commercial single-family houses because they're an issue temporary certificate of occupancy. That's their final inspection sign-off is their certificate of occupancy.
Okay, so...
They're specifically issued.
All right.
Basically, it is encourage the commercial buildings, basically, to finish their work so they don't get, you know, 98% done, get their certificate occupancy, and never get anything done after that.
Okay.
So just a little urging them along to get that last little bit of work done.
$100, I don't think that's really going to...
Commercial.
To me, $100 each time is... I mean, I'm not somebody who's doing something is going to be motivated by paying another $100. So we're getting some more money out of that, but that just seems kind of like, you know, like not being business friendly. Do we have a big problem with people not doing this? Are we not getting paid? Are we not getting fees that were owed? And okay,
just to get them to finish their building and not have to
kind of get them to move along. Okay, that's not my favorite thing, but I'll leave my comments at that for now. Thank you.
Any other discussion on this item? Councilmember Cuddeback?
So just about the transportation impact fee.
Mm-hmm.
So 28% seems like a pretty big increase.
Mm-hmm.
Can you point to where, I'm looking in the document, I didn't see it where it is to what it goes to?
That's good. There was no, for single family houses, for example, if I can get down.
Yeah.
It's $2,200 now, and it goes up to $2,800.
Okay, for each
single family house. Right.
Right. So that, I mean, as a council, you know, we've talked over the last few years about the impact fees, and are they too much? You know, mm-hmm. Do they hinder? And I think we've heard from builders that pretty high in Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're looking at doing a 28% increase for transportation. It seems high. And so I don't know if we could have some discussion about that or look at that a little bit. Do we have to, I mean, that seems like a huge jump for Jesse's fees for inflation, 28%. So Brad, can you tell me a little bit more about Washington State Department of Transportation Construction Cost Index, and does it go up every year? Is 28% typical? I mean, when we look at these fees every year, I don't remember seeing that big of a jump.
Oh, just for a second.
And do we have to follow it?
I was looking for it.
Okay.
Says, the transportation impact fees computed in this section will be adjusted annually in accordance with the Washington State Department of Transportation Construction Cost Index, with the first such increase taking effect on or within 2 years of the adoption of the ordinance codified in this chapter, and with subsequent increases to coincide with the city's annual adoption of the 6-year street plan. So basically it says for the ordinance that's adopted that annually we increase the fees based on, actually adjusted, because actually in some years we've actually made them go down. They went up the first like 4 years, I think, and then they went down a couple of years. If you remember, this last year we reduced them because, you know, when the economy went down, the construction cost index went down, and so we reduced them. Now, as the economy is going back up, the cost of doing road projects has increased, and it went up substantially this year. So.
Thoughts on that, or but it sounds like we have to follow that. Is that what's in the
ordinance? I'm assuming we have to follow our ordinance, but
yeah.
There's nothing that says that we can't amend that ordinance that says that you don't have to follow the construction cost index. But currently, the ordinance on the books right now says that it is to be increased each year or adjusted each year in accordance with the CCI. Some years it goes up, some years it goes down.
And what was your, you said it. Could be, though, within 2 years of the...
You said the first time after it was adopted in 2008 is when we adopted the transportation plan. They said within the first 2 years you have to do it, and then annually after that.
Oh, okay. All right. That's what I didn't understand. So it sounds like we're kind of stuck in doing that at this point because we have to follow our ordinance.
Right.
Unless we amend it.
And then if we did come back and amend that ordinance... change that, would then we just come back and change this at a later time?
Then
that
then you just change the fees resolution.
Okay. Okay. That's all my questions right now.
And we've got three lights. I do have two quick questions. Why is that in the ordinance?
Yeah. That's
well, because by that particular one is that the setting of the fees is in the ordinance, supposed to be in the ordinance, and that's how it's done. And at the time the ordinance was adopted, the council's decision was to make sure that we had money into the future, because if you set the prices of the construction projects, you know, at 1 year, you're not collecting the money until, you know, multiple years later, things have probably gone up. And so that was to keep collecting enough money to be able to fund the projects multiple years after they were put on the list.
Okay. And the projects are there to mitigate for impacts caused by growth.
By growth, correct.
Okay. And so if the cost of the projects is reflected in part by the change in market conditions that will go up sometimes and will go down sometimes, if we reduce the amount of money that is being collected from growth, in order to do the same level of projects, where does the money come from to do the same level of projects when costs go up if that is not in the code?
If it does not increase, it has to come from out of the general fund.
Okay.
Or grants.
Or REIT. Certain types of REIT qualify?
Yeah.
Okay, so this was put in the ordinance probably then so that growth would pay for growth and that there would be a way to adjust the amount that is collected according to changes in market conditions.
Right.
And it has gone down in the past and has gone up according to those.
Right.
Okay. So, all right. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. On page 2 of finance, where it says page 15 reflects a 4.4% increase in water rates, and page 16 reflects a 14% increase in sewer rates. In those, I believe in the past we've talked, and staff has been great about putting some kind of information in the utility bills explaining.
Absolutely.
So that would be my only ask, is if we could, you guys have done a great job in that before.
And it's going out with the January bills.
Okay.
Because they don't see it until the February.
Yeah. That's all, thanks.
Council Member Gehring.
Thank you. Just a couple comments on the transportation piece. I don't remember doing this in the past, where we needed to amend an ordinance to set our fees. We do this every year. We set our fees every year. I don't remember having to jump through the hoop that, at least, and maybe I'm misunderstanding. Also, it's kind of, we're doing this for growth, but that's kind of biting the hand that feeds us. If we want growth to come in, jacking up fees isn't going to help growth come in. And so I have an issue with the 28%. If we don't have to do that full amount, I would certainly choose not to do that full amount. It sounds like the wording is adjust, and adjust, to me, there's a little bit of flexibility in how we actually do that. So to just kind of further comments as to what Councilmember Cutterback was saying in response to that, I absolutely agree that number is high. To me, that actually sets that's setting us in a direction that doesn't make us come build in our city friendly. It says the exact opposite. And I understand that there's something in the ordinance that says that. So if we need to change it, then I'm in favor of that. But I just don't remember us having to do that before when we set these fees, and I don't ever remember a 28% increase. Maybe there was that I don't remember, but that seems really, really high for that. So thank you.
Councilmember Campbell.
So let's make sure I got it correct. So 2008 is when the verbiage went in for Washington to use the Washington State Department of Transportation Construction Cost Index. Is that what I heard?
Actually, went in 2007, but the plan was adopted in 2008, which then that's where it started at.
So that's when we started using that as a projection.
Yes.
It's a projection number. So by my math, back on the napkin here, that we've got about 7 years worth of data. Or could we actually compare actual construction costs to what the Washington State Department of Transportation Construction Cost Index was projecting, and see what the delta was there, if it's actually higher or lower?
We could do it based on unit costs for particular items, but I mean, you can't compare projects to projects if you don't do the same project. Mm-hmm.
You could do unit costs.
Prices, but I mean, that's also difficult because, even in projects, go out to bid at the same time, we'll come in with different unit bid prices just depending on how the contractor wants to, fund their project. So it would give you an idea, but it wouldn't be something that was specific. And also, the construction cost index is an aggregate of, the cost of these, just like the consumer price index. The shopping basket, basically WashDOT has a shopping basket of construction items that they price out each year, and that's how they determine what it was.
Yeah, I think I need a better understanding of the construction cost index and what goes into that formula is what I need. Because, it's a state index, so
correct.
If it's by unit, then, maybe you're differentiating, but it's one number, though. It's the same number used for everybody.
Yeah.
So your metro costs included with more rural costs for
state,
construction
state
of...
Number, yes.
So I think if that's the case, then... if we were to approve this because it's in conjunction with what we have in an ordinance, I would want to see on a docket down the road a discussion around, this, an understanding of this, what goes into that 28%, and then maybe where potential deltas are. And I understand the unit, it would be a little bit difficult, but if we've been on it for 7 years, 8 years, we should have some sort of understanding of what, or at least our trend is, cost-wise and how it compares. So that's my comment on that one.
One question. So What do other jurisdictions do the same benchmarking?
Yes, I'm not sure that they all use the same thing, but it is done in other cities.
Okay, and we're working on a transportation plan as part of the 2015 right. Comprehensive Plan update. Would that be the natural time where looking at things like that would be part of that 2015
right.
Comp plan update?
Part of the transportation plan, comp plan update is how you fund your roads, and so that can be a discussion at that time of, you know, we're going to set the prices and leave them the same, use, you know, the CIP. CPI to do it. The purpose of using the CCI instead of the CPI is that it's construction related as opposed to
right.
grocery related, and, yeah. and you know, sometimes oil prices, even though right now oil prices are going down, I would assume
but
that
the price
next,
of milk goes up.
I would assume that next year is going to drop substantially because oil's gotten down so much recently, and that's the because we're always a year behind
right.
on that.
I just trying to because the number you used is there was it's about a. Would you? It was a $300 difference per plat or per residential home.
No, $600 per house.
$600 per house, and how much did that? That goes into effect in January. In January, as soon as we approve this, didn't we just go through the mitigation fees that reduced it by $300 the house for on the school impact fees, somewhere in there? What was the difference? Do you guys remember?
That was last year, right?
Yeah.
Understood.
No, I'm just trying to remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a year ago.
It went down. Single family houses went down last time. Yeah.
How do we remember how much? I just think it's a substantial. Yeah, it's just a substantial. I mean, this one action is going to completely wipe out. And I know we all didn't agree on that, but I just wanted to bring that to the forefront. It's going to wipe that one, the other action that we were trying to accomplish out. Anyway, I think okay. Thank you,
Councilmember Cutterback.
I was just going to add that I think we should look at this at future and figure out if we want to keep our ordinance the same, because I think it just setting it on, you know, the 28%, the increase doesn't, it's complicated to, it's not just as easy as we're just going to cover the cost of the construction. Growth is complicated. We want to spur it. We want to encourage people to come here. So I think just following an index and just increasing it that way doesn't take in some of the subtle, you know, discussions that we've had about, you know, how do we spur growth? How do we make our permit process fast? How do we, you know, have our impact fees high enough so they cover certain costs, but also low enough so it encourages builders to want to come in here? So I think if we just set it based on that index, we're not having that discussion about, you know, the other things that we've talked about. And you said it increased at 600 per unit?
For single family houses, yes.
Yeah, so if you have 100 units that you're building in January, it's going to increase it 60,000. I mean, that's pretty significant to a builder that wants to come in and do 100 units. So I just think it's something we need to consider and maybe bring back sooner than later, whether we continue following this or not.
Okay. Councilmember Gehring?
Thanks. I agree with that, absolutely. Brad, since it uses the word adjust, mm-hmm. It doesn't, does the, since I don't have it in front of me, I'm asking, it doesn't say by the amount, right?
In accordance with.
In accordance. And so in accordance isn't necessarily the 28%. It's recommending an increase. It's not
proportional to.
It doesn't, it would, right, it, well, that would be to my point. It doesn't say proportional to. It just says in accordance with, and it just says adjust. It doesn't say you have to do whatever the number that it spits out in the formula. I don't think it says you have to do that number, does it?
I mean, that's what we've done the last 7 years.
But we've never had a 28% increase in front of us either. So that's what I'm saying, that I'm not okay with that, yeah.
Would you yield for a question for the attorney? For your input on that?
I would think that it would be the number suggested by the end.
Okay, well, that's what I'm asking, because to me there's some gray wording in there, so I'm trying to figure it out. No?
In accordance with me, would probably mean you need to adopt the number that's in the index. And I would suggest, again, if
future agenda coming up. We'll tackle that a little later in the agenda.
Is there any other discussion on this item? It is slated for consent agenda next week. Given the conversation that we've had, would you prefer to have that on regular agenda?
Yes, please. Mm-hmm.
Yes, please.
Okay. So we'll put that under, is that, help me out here, is that unfinished business? Or new business? Final action. Let's do final action. Thank you. Is there, so, before this comes back, is there any information that council would want that staff might be able to pull together before next week, recognizing that it's a very short timeline to bring information back? Councilmember Cutaback.
Well, somebody asked a question whether other cities do that. Does that come?
That was me.
So if we can look at maybe what other cities do, kind of similar our size and more suburban rural, you know, because I think that has a huge effect. I mean, we're not Seattle, or maybe 28% for builders to build there. I don't know. It's just a high amount. So if we could have just some inkling or some information about what others do to cover those impact fees, that might be helpful.
All right. So we'll see what information we can pull together about what other cities do related to that. And we will, when we come back to the extended agenda, we'll talk about where to put that on the extended agenda for additional conversation. All right. If there's nothing else, there's no action. This is just a discussion item. So we're going to go ahead and move on to AB 14-172. This is under new business. It's item number 2. It's ordinance number 022-2014, Holzerland rezone, first reading. And I would like to call an executive session not to exceed more than probably we'll do 5 minutes initially. And for the purpose of discussing with legal counsel litigation or potential litigation, person to RCW 4230-110-1I. And we're going to go ahead and use this room. So we'll need planning staff to stay.
Or to Bellevue or something.
He's down there. Welcome back. All right, we're back in open session, and Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. I'd like to, I move to accept this first reading, ordinance number 022-2014, amending zoning designations in the Holzerland rezone area from urban residential 9600, UR 9600, to urban residential 6000, UR 6000, setting forth findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Second.
Okay, I have a first and I have a second from Councilmember Cutaback. Oh,
sorry.
Okay, so we have a motion, we have a second, and staff would now like to give a very brief presentation.
I did have a very brief presentation. It's my point for the agenda bill, but I wanted to move for internet to Kristen, our city attorney, because this is a quasi-judicial item, so we have to go for
Sorry. We're just making motions there.
Okay. Kristen, go for it.
Because consideration of the site specific rezone involves a public hearing and implicates the land use rights of the specific landowner, the proceeding is quasi judicial in nature and is subject to the appearance of fairness doctrine. The appearance of fairness doctrine requires that such proceeding be fair not only in fact but also in appearance. The legal standard under this doctrine is whether a disinterested person is being appraised of all relevant facts would be reasonably justified in taking a particular decision maker's interest or involvement in the case may affect his or her judgment. So I'll ask the council a series of questions that you can answer in this. Does any council member have a financial interest in the project or underlying property?
No.
Does any council member have a family member who is a party of record?
No.
Does any council member have a personal or familial employment or other business relationship with the party of record?
No.
Does any council member own property within the public notice mailing radius of the project site?
No.
Is any council member aware of any other personal interest or involvement with the project, the parties of record, or the property that should fairly be disclosed?
disclosed.
No.
Is any council member aware of any personal bias for or against any party or for against the project?
No. No.
Has any council member prejudged any issues?
No.
No. Has any council member not reviewed the record materials for the project?
No.
Is any council member aware of any reason why she would not be able to perform his or her duties in an objective, impartial, and fair manner?
No.
No. And has any council member had ex parte communications regarding the project while the proposal was pending?
No.
Okay. I would suggest the mayor open the floor for parties of record to formally challenge any council member pursuant to RCW 4236080. Appearance and fairness challenges are waived unless they are raised at this time.
Okay. Are there any members of the public that would challenge any of the council members pursuant to what our attorney just explained? Anybody? Okay, seeing none. We have a motion on the table, and staff is going to give a brief presentation. Thank you.
This agenda development for a rezone on several properties in Lexington Row. The map that's on the screen there shows there are four parcels contained within this rezone. These parcels are all owned by Mr. David Holderland, and tonight is the first reading for this ordinance. If you recall, we had you set a date for consideration of the November 18th meeting and gave you a brief introduction tonight. I'm just going to give you a brief summary. So this these properties comprise roughly 31.10 acres of land, and they're asking to rezone it from UR9600 to UR6000. So it's two residential zones. Basically, what it does is increase the amount of density that can be allowed under the zoning district. The rezone applicant is Quadrant Homes, who's intending to build a subdivision on the property, and the owner of Mary mentioned is David Holderland. The applicant is represented by CTH Consultants, and I just wanted to point out that we've got both Quadrant Homes and CTH Consultants in the room tonight, Matt Howe and Matt Perkins. So if there are questions that come up particularly for them, they may be able to address some of those. In terms of the process, because this is a site-specific rezone, as Kristen mentioned earlier, it's quasi-judicial. There is a public hearing before Planning Commission that has already occurred. You have that in your packet. There is a recommendation to you, the City Council, and then ultimately you have the final decision on this rezone. In terms of background, there was a CEPA determination issued, and that was a DNS. The city received no appeal on that DNS. And the proponent also held a neighborhood meeting at the library for the Foothills HOA back in October. And my understanding is a lot of the concerns and discussions occurred then, so that there was, most of those were handled. But those that weren't, you did receive two written public comments. Those are in your packet, one from Mr. Ford and the other from the HOA from the Foothills. And the city responded in writing to the Foothills HOA, and that is also contained in your packet. In terms of Mr. Ford's concern was namely with tract 901, that tract has been removed from the original application was for five parcels. Now they removed tract 901, which was basically the triangle to the right of all of the properties. And so now you've just got four parcels that are under consideration.
I'm sorry, which, what area?
The four black squares.
That little section. Oh, that section.
Right.
Thank you.
That was a part of the original application that was removed. It's a kind of one of the Foothills Division. Mr. Davis Holderland owns it, but due to some discussion about the legality of it, there was some removal of it. Ultimately, it just removed some of the concerns and issues that were brought up by the city.
Thank you.
So, in terms of the Planning Commission hearing on November 10th, that hearing was held. Both the applicant and the representative spoke. In addition to them, there were two other public comments, and those are also summarized in your packet. It's my understanding that all of those concerns that were brought up at that meeting were addressed. Otherwise, I would anticipate that we'd hear from you folks tonight. In terms of the criteria and analysis, staff did a staff report. I think you've had a chance to read over that. We stand by the staff report, the findings and conclusions and recommendation in there. Ultimately, we determined that it was consistent with the comprehensive plan, the language in the comprehensive plan, the zoning code, State Environmental Policy Act, and also the Growth Management Act. So that's there are city council findings and conclusions, and also planning commission findings and conclusions. And ultimately, we can come back to you on next week, on Tuesday, December 16th, for a second and final reading of this. So I guess at this time, I can just ask if anybody has any questions for me, and I can certainly be happy to answer those.
Council, do you have any questions? Okay. There is a motion on the floor. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, there is a motion on the floor. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Okay. We're now going to move on to the next item on the agenda. This is discussion under new business number 3, AB 14173, 2015 Comprehensive Plan, Southwest UGA. And I think Brad has this.
As you recall, in the past, the City Council has directed staff to include the Southwest UGA in the comprehensive plan amendment or comprehensive plan update for 2015 in hopes of presenting that to the county council in the future to have it included in the City of Monroe's urban growth area. Part of that agreement or the discussion we had with the council was that the majority property owner at that area was going to financially participate in the preparation of the environmental impact statement that would provide the supporting documentation for that inclusion in the future update by the county council. The majority property owner has since started work on another project on this property zone and is no longer in the financial position to contribute to the city's environmental impact statement. He has spent the money on other environmental work that he's doing for his current project that's underway. He's happy to share that information with us. However, it's not currently available, and we don't know if it will be available in time to meet our deadline of having all the information done so we get our environmental impact statement done so we move on with the process to have the 2015 comprehensive plan update done by the end of June. Our consultant thinks that if we get that information by the beginning of January, we will, and it's a sufficient quality, he can use that to prepare the EIS at no additional cost to the city, except for that $18,000 that we were going to pay for the environmental impact statement update for that. However, if it does not come in time, there will be some additional costs done, needed, and we don't know, he doesn't know quite yet what those are, to have sufficient environmental information for that area to include in our 2015 comprehensive plan update. So the question is the council wishing to continue to use, include that in the comprehensive plan update? And if so, are they willing to authorize the expenditure of funds that aren't currently in the budget and we probably have to come to the contingency fund?
Okay. Councilmember Gehring.
No. And so I do believe that we need to have some of this area. We need to ask for some of this area. If the property owner in question doesn't own everything that's in the green, I don't believe every single one of those pieces of property, that's a different map. But the one I'm looking at here, I believe the area of the property owner that you're talking about is all the stuff south of 522.
Not all the stuff that's south of 522 that's south of the prison property, more
correct.
Less.
That's yeah. That's what I meant. The two triangle pieces, that are right along 522 are not owned by the person you're talking about,
correct.
And neither is the area on the north side of 522. And I believe that the area of farmland north of Old Snohomish Monroe Road, I'll let you. This area may or may not be owned. The area that's north of Old Snohomish Monroe Road, that's kind of a interesting shape on the north side of Old Snohomish Monroe Road.
Yes.
Isn't that also owned by the person in question?
He's north of the green
north
line.
Of that. My proposal, everything but. This is a piece of If we were able, and I know it's a very, very long process, and even if we were even to get it, onto the docket and not have to wait two more years to ask again in 2019, four more years to ask again in 2019, that puts this area, there's a tremendous opportunity for economic development here for us if we were to be successful in getting it into the UGA and eventually annexing this area. But this is a super long-term thing, and waiting to at least not take a shot at doing this, from a financial standpoint, yeah, that's, here's some more money. Quite frankly, I think it's a great investment. But, if we can't get support from the pieces of land from someone who was previously involved, I say we move forward, including in the comprehensive plan, the areas except for that person's property, which still leaves us a very nice area, which makes a lot of sense and actually provides, were to be in the city, eventually provides us all kinds of opportunities for other things that we aren't able to do in other areas of town. A lot of potential there, as we discussed, a lot last year, which is why this is here in the first place. So if there's a way to, if not including that, not including that property in there reduces that cost, then I'd be certainly in favor of entertaining that. I think it's important to not, that we don't miss an opportunity, regardless of whether or not we're successful. We can try again next time, but I don't want to miss this time, when this time is still in front of us. Those are my thoughts. Thanks.
Which property are you talking about? Are you talking about the area that is northerly of 522 and southerly of Main Street?
We're going to get rid of this because this, and all this goes away. And we would, this nice shape right
That's
here.
Kind of a funny shape because it's, you skip property.
Yeah, but you have access to it from Tesla.
Do we have a map that we can put up so that everybody can see what we're talking about?
Sorry.
Nice seeing you, Kevin.
For the recording.
Sorry, Kevin.
For the recording, instead of pointing at the mayor's screen, we're going to put it up on the screen.
The whole point of putting his stuff is because he was going to participate. He's not going to participate.
You could have spent for
that, and
you're probably spent for that.
For him.
Is he still interested?
He said he is, he just doesn't have the money. Which puts it realistically 10 years out from ever happening if it happens.
Ultimately, maybe we can save a little time. Is it 55 grand regardless of whether that piece of property is in or not? It's 55 plus 18.
Yeah.
So our share was 18.
For the stuff that wasn't owned by that property owner.
That's 18.
Yeah, so the stuff, if you don't include the stuff that is owned by that majority property owner, then 18.
Then it's 18. That answers my question. Well, let's make certain everybody's on the same page.
18 is much better than 55.
I'm thinking that what you were just going through would just be 18,000 as opposed to 18 plus 55.
Yeah,
but so I'd like everybody to see what you were pointing at.
All right.
Are you saying we're saving 18,000?
No. The whole thing, rather than costing 18 plus 55, it would just be 18 to include.
All right.
All this right here is out.
Right.
So this triangle, and everything up to
that section
is not that property owner's property, as I understand it, mm-hmm. And that is only 18,000. If to include all this as well is 18 plus 55. Right. I would not be in favor of that. So that's what I was talking about. Those are my thoughts.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Councilmember Gehring?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble.
No, that was some of the same questions I had, and I guess the only, just for a point of reference, what are we always planning to do to include the 18, or the section as the 18, okay, and then we just added because the property owner was interested?
Correct.
I'm trying to recollect.
Yeah. When I was on council a number of years ago, there was an interest in including the area that Councilmember Gehring just pointed to,
right,
into the city.
Just that side of 522.
Yep. Right.
But the two triangles make sense.
Right. So that's been the interest all along.
Yes.
And then it was just when the property owner brought that we added it.
Exactly.
And then I'm absolutely, but that was I'm absolutely in favor.
We just acquired the water system in that area as well. So
we own the water system too, right? Is that what you just said? Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So council, I am looking just for some a motion to proceed with the $18,000 share and not proceed with the balance of it would be an appreciated thing, just because we have a resolution on the record that says otherwise. Councilmember Gamble?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so I have a motion to proceed with doing the environmental review that is the subject of the $18,000 portion of the SEPA review in what's known as Southwest Monroe UGA expansion.
It's already budgeted.
That is already budgeted, that
Thank
is
you.
Correct. Yep. And not do the balance of it, which is most of the lands, but not all of the lands, southerly of 522. All right. So I have a first from Councilmember Gamble and a second from Councilmember Gehring. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion passes 7-0. Okay, the next item that we have on the agenda is planning, permitting, and building position. All right, Ben's going to start off.
Evening. Gene and I had hoped to do this in tandem, but I'm not here, so if you're stuck with me, I apologize for that. So, as most of you know, we do have an opening in planning and permitting, and we wanted to talk about what we want the future, what we want to hire for. Currently, that position is manager, and we can talk about the proposed org chart and the current org chart.
It's two separate.
There's more.
Oh.
I didn't do
Take that.
I did not do that.
Proposed and north, current and proposed. I got them both.
Does everybody have
Yeah, I'll look up at the top left.
Okay.
It's just me.
By the logo, there's two different ones. One says org chart, one
says proposed. Okay.
Got it. So our current org chart has public works director, Brad, with an operation and maintenance manager, designing construction manager, equipment manager, a vacant planning manager, and a official reporting to all to Brad. As it sits today. Up for discussion is the proposed org chart where we bring in a community development director and that way planning and building would swing out from under public works and be its own standalone department. That's how it used to be for those of you that have been here kind of pre-recession. We had a community development director, I think around 2010. That position was vacated. There was to a planning manager for reasons I'm not sure because I wasn't here. And it's really about trying to build back what we used to have in that department. Is there anything you wanted to add, Mayor? Or Brad?
Brad first, and then do you have anything?
No.
Okay. And I'm sorry, Gene. Gene wasn't able to be here this evening due to something that came up very last minute. So so what's missing on here, of course, is all the personnel underneath these boxes. The community development director position is a position that, as you all recall from earlier this year, I mentioned I felt that we needed. A community development director is different than a planning manager. A planning manager is somebody that, if you put it into a sort of a layperson approach, sort of manages downward. So you're managing personnel, you're managing, you know, your narrow budget and whatnot. Community development director, very much like when we hired Mike Farrell, director is a position that is forward-thinking, that is proactive, that acts as a liaison with the elected officials and basically acts as a serves as a proponent for his or her department. It is a position that typically has strong connections with the Chamber of Commerce, the Economic Alliance, the Snohomish County, Snohomish County Tomorrow, and other organizations. In some jurisdictions, and I know that there are some council members that I've spoken with a little bit about this, in some jurisdictions those positions primarily just do that liaison work and come up and talk in front of council and whatnot. This is not the type of jurisdiction where we would have that kind of community development director.
The position would be one that is a working director that would process subdivisions, that would process single-family permits, while at the same time developing the budget and managing personnel, while at the same time, as I said, acting as a proponent for things like downtown revitalization, as a resource for developing grant applications and doing a lot of those economic development, business development, downtown revitalization needs that our city really benefits from. So those are some of my broad reasons as to why I feel that a community development director would be of value for our city. And I think that's where I'll leave it for right now. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. And I appreciate your desire for that. I was thinking that a year from now, just personally, you know, as we're rebuilding it back up, what we need right now, in my mind, as I shared with you last week, the hand's dirty. We lost a senior planner, and we need a senior planner to continue that kind of work. The community development director and economic development, that was, we did try that in 2020. I know some other cities, you know, have those kind of things listed together. And at least in my experience of looking at that, that ends up being a little bit more of a little more lip service to economic development than the full-on focus that we've had. Now, I know we don't have that position staffed, and that's not not the plan for the next year. The workload that we've been talking about, there's a lot of other things other than the things that we already have on our plate that you were just mentioning, and those are great things. But if this person is hired, you know, we were already talking about the workload, that this person needs to be working on the things that are already on the list. And so if it really is getting hands dirty, then I would hope the job description, somewhere in there where we can point back to saying, you know, I'd rather have that person here doing those things than going out to meetings and doing those other things. And that's why I'm more in favor myself of a senior planner. And yeah, we need to restaff that at a time. My feeling is that we're not quite there yet. And I appreciate that you want to bring that back. That's not, it's an important position to have. And I get that. Just looking at the needs now and in the process of rebuilding the department, to me it makes more sense to wait on that. And unless that person is truly going to be hands dirty with all the things that we already have. Also knowing that with the amount of stuff that we have, we're going to have to make use of our on-call planning services this next year, regardless of who we hire, and we're going to need to do that. And I know, you know, that's something that's budget affecting as well. And I think this position also is would be a little bit higher of a hit to the budget as well. Just something to think about with this as well. Not opposed to it. I just think we're better served by having a senior planner position. But I'd certainly love to hear what other council members have to say. Thanks.
And I just want to be very clear. The position will get their hands dirty. The position, just like a lot of other smaller jurisdictions that are around here, will process permits. We'll pick up where staff is not able to do work. And I strongly feel that we need a professional here in that sort of position that can act in a leadership role. Planning manager, senior planner, certainly, to me, doesn't fill that sort of a role. And I think a lot of the things that we talk about where we want to have strong relationships with groups like the Chamber deserves having a director position. I understand from staff that if we were to hire the position at mid-range, that the cost versus the planning manager that is not here now is an increase of about $10,000 to $15,000 at mid-range. And does that sound, was that about right, Diane? Okay. So, you know, to me, waiting a year, you know, if we bring in a planning manager to manage the unit, it'll be difficult to bring in somebody that we think will be a planning director, a community development director in the future, and I don't want to tie our hands with somebody that, you know, maybe they're just good as a planning manager or just good as a senior planner when I know that we need both. And just to give everybody some understanding, I've worked with community development directors before in Lewis County and Pacific County that did get their hands dirty, and my first planning director was in Pacific County. He taught me the importance of getting the bread and butter done first. You know, I came in, I got my single family permits done, my septic permit review done, my zoning permit stuff done first. And when we had too much to do, he did the work as well. So we worked side by side getting stuff done. He was the one that went to the what was then the Board of Commissioners. He was the one that went to, you know, the Rotary Board, you know, the Rotary meetings, the Lions Club, to the Chamber. But if the bread and butter wasn't getting taken care of, he stayed in the office and got the work done. Granted, he'd go to the Board of County Commissioners, his bosses, but he stayed and he got the work done if I wasn't able to get the work done because of the large number of applications that came in. I feel that bringing in a community development director, talking about rebuilding the unit, that sounds really sudden. That's not what I'm looking at doing right now. What I'm looking at doing is having a community development director come in and being able to assess where things need to be, take a look at some of the things we've talked about here tonight, like the transportation impact fees. Is that the right way to do things? And act as a liaison with the fire district and whatnot. At that point in time, they would be able to make recommendations for the 2016 or even the 2017 budget if other planners are necessary, other people in the building unit. So that's just a little bit more detail on that from me. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I guess, you know, when I take a look at, actually I'm glad you said the stuff that we've looked at tonight, because everything we've looked at tonight, whether we agree on the item or not, is all long-range thinking. We've got a lot of stuff coming up that's long-range thinking. And I just look at our org structure that we have right now. We've got Brad as a director. We've got Diane as a director. We've got Mike as a director. I've seen every one of them get their hands dirty.
Mike is out there on Sunday doing fires.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not.
I drove Santa back to the fire district.
Brad did a SEPA analysis himself. I guess I'm not as concerned about that because that's just kind of how we run. Mm-hmm. So I like the thought of having I think that's exactly what you do when you're in a situation that you actually referenced, Kurt, that you may not be there, but you are, you know you got to go there, that you get a hybrid where you're hiring for the role, maybe at a mid-level, that they're doing both, but they understand that their job is also to be long-range thinking with all these different things that we voted on. So I think it's a great idea. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Yes, I'm supportive of moving forward also. I think, our community, our planning and permitting department is a very important department. It's an important department for our city. We're at an important time, we're trying to spur development. Finish up Kelsey, get the comp plan update. I mean, we've got a lot of stuff going on, so I think having a director-level person in charge of that very important department is important. And it doesn't appear to be a budget concern with, the cost differential only being $10,000 to $15,000. That's worth it to get a high-level director position. I think that's it. Yeah, so I'm supportive. And the opportunity is now we have a vacant position. If we wait a year and hire a lower level, I don't want to sound lower level, that's not the words I want to use, but hire a planner for that position, I think we're going to miss some opportunity in moving forward and starting our long-range stuff now. So I don't think we can afford to wait. Thank you.
And I want to emphasize, I've heard everybody talk about planning. This is not just planning. It's planning, building, and the fire department, and permitting. That's one thing that's really important to recognize. This is not, the person may have a strength in planning or may even be a planner, but it manages the whole department. And Brad's been wonderful by taking on this duty over the last couple months and before for a period of time. But Brad's got road projects that he needs to make certain get done, and honestly, he's got a lot of great contacts. He's been doing a lot of great work with the chamber. I saw him at the chamber luncheon today and whatnot. And I need, I would like to bring in a community development director that he can then mentor some of those relationships, and let that person begin to build those relationships with the chamber so that he can work on roads and sewers and water lines and whatever else you do. Oh, emergency management. director, you know. Director of everything. The other thing too is that our city administrator receives direct input from this person, and our city administrator, except for a couple of positions, the city clerk and HR being two of them, really needs to have director level people reporting to the city administrator. They need to be people that can look proactively and understand where pitfalls might be in planning, building, life safety, and to me that's what a community development director does. So it's not just about personnel, and I can't rely on Brad for everything. So, but you're doing a great job with everything. Fist bump? Thank you. Okay. Councilmember Hanford. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, in the interest of time, I support your idea. I agree with everything Councilmember Campbell said. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp?
Thank you. I'll echo Councilmember Hanford's statement in the interest of time.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback, did I forget?
I just wanted to add, I wanted to thank Brad for his efforts and what he's done, and I didn't want him to take my comments of hiring a higher-level director person to anyway infer that you have not done a wonderful job and are incredibly important resource to the city. So I just want to say that publicly.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Just to make certain that I have consensus, it would be nice to have a motion supporting adding a community development director position to the 2015 budget. And then we'll see. I know that the budget is on for tonight. We'll then see if Diane has the ability to amend. Okay, and she's shaking her head. Yes.
So let's defund the planning manager position and fund a community development director position. Is that what you want to do? Or just change the...
We don't
need to defund it. It's just changing it.
Yeah, we just need to change the position. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and call in Councilmember Gamble.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so the motion was to change the planning manager position into a community development director position for the 2015 budget. Is that the motion?
That's the motion.
Okay. All right, so I have a first from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The next item that we have on our agenda is final action. This is final action number 1, AB 14-174, Ordinance 17-2014, SUB.
Substitution.
Thank you. Okay. Amending impact fee waivers. I was thinking of the Beatles and Yellow Submarines. Okay. Final reading, and would this be you?
It would be.
Okay.
We've talked about this a few times. There's a interim ordinance that has repealed all the impact fee waivers that expires on the 24th of December. In order to have an ordinance in place before that expires, final action needs to be taken tonight on this. Basically, what it does is it implements the 80% non-reimbursed waiver for schools, parks, and transportation impact fees for low-income housing, and also allows for a discretionary 20% based on budgeted amounts by the city council on a basis for the additional 20% that would be paid back by the general fund as budgeted. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Councilmember Gearing.
I don't have a question, but I'll make a motion. This is the second and final reading, is it?
Yes, it is.
I just didn't see that in the request of action. I move to adopt a second and final reading, Ordinance Number 017/2014-SUB, amending Monroe Municipal Code, Chapter 20.07, School Impact Fee Mitigation Program, Chapter 20.10, Park Impact Fees, and Chapter 20.12, Transportation Impact Fees, establishing certain public interest exemptions to the city's impact fee regulations, providing for severability, and establishing an effective date.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gearing. I have a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Next item on the agenda is under final action. This is number 2, AB 14-175, Ordinance Number 018-2014, adopting the 2015 budget, final reading. I was going to call you Councilmember Diane.
You've been demoted.
I went to sub promotion.
That's what I said.
If you can go to the budget document in your agenda, the very last page 32, is the amount of authorized FTEs that you authorized in the budget. That's not changing at all. On page 31 is a listing of all authorized positions and their salary ranges. And that's what needs to change in, with the addition of Community Development Director under plan. On page 31, these are not all filled positions. There are just authorized positions that the city could administratively make use of. For instance, the Economic Development Director, Development Manager is still on there. This is just possible positions the city could have. And so in order to, it leaves on the Planning Manager, but it adds the Community Development Director. However, the number of FTEs or number of employees that you are authorizing, that's on page 32, the other page, and that's not changing. So I'm hoping you're going to adopt the budget. And when you do it, you could amend it with this. I don't know how you would say it.
Do you have an amendment? Can we put an exhibit number on it? Just throw an exhibit A on there.
It is exhibit.
Oh, it is Exhibit A.
Well,
adding that line to the chart on page 31.
Page 31.
Yeah. And then to page 31 of Exhibit A.
It's Exhibit A.
To include the Community Development Director under planning.
To add a Community Development Director under planning.
So we'll remember that after the parent motion is made to do an amended motion. Okay. All right. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Diane, I appreciate all the updates in the cover sheet. And again, I appreciate the way that this has been presented. The information is clear and concise, and we've been able to dive down a little bit, but still so much better than those 3-inch binders that we used to get with every line item, which was really difficult to look through. I don't see anything that we really haven't talked about other than the thing tonight, and we have talked about this in the Finance Committee. And I know others, and we already had a first reading of this as well. I think we're pretty good. I'll just say, you know, there are some other things that may or may not impact the budget in the next year. We don't know how much, and I'm assuming we'll have budget amendments as we did this year over the course of the year for things as costs come in for X, Y, and Z, as we always do, and funds get transferred.
Yeah, in April or May, there will be the first budget amendment to amend the beginning fund balances, because that'll be known, and if there's anything at that time,
and we may or may not have further information on things we talked about earlier tonight at that time as well. So, okay. I appreciate that. From that standpoint, I'll go ahead and move to adopt ordinance number 018-2014, adopting the budget for the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2015.
Second. I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, and who was the second? Councilmember Davis.
Oh, and I should say amending page 31 to include a community development director.
Okay, and the motion includes amending that page to include
page 31.
The director.
Second.
Okay, so that's the motion. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of adopting the 2015 budget with that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion passes 7-0. All right, thank you. And I have to echo what Councilmember Gehring said. Staff, you guys did a great job this year. Everybody
staff,
did a great job.
Everybody, thank you. Mm-hmm.
And so thank you. All right. 9:30. All right. So we're under final action number 3, AB 14-176, approve the 2015 Lodging Tax Advisory Committee Grant Awards. And Brad?
Yes. As the city has established a lodging tax several years ago. We collect money to be used for tourism promotion. The annual applications were solicited. We received five applications. One, two, three, four, five. Yes, five applications. For a total of $87,200. They were reviewed by the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee. We're planning on budgeting $80,000 for the grants, and if you can see on the second attachment that shows how that the amount of money we've been expending on lodging tax grants is greater than the amount of money we've been receiving from lodging tax. So in an effort to kind of rein that in a bit, they decided only to award $78,000 this year. Due to the work that's done by the chamber in promoting the road, they decided to fully fund the chamber's request in $65,000, and they did not fund the Monroe Historical Society for brochures or the Monroe Parks Department for brochures, but they did award partial grants. The City of Monroe Parks Department asked for $8,000 each for the USA Triathlon and for the Mastercraft Pro Wakeboard Tour. They did award, recommend an award of $6,500 each for those. While the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee does make recommendations to the council, per state law, the council can only award based on the awards that the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee makes. You cannot change the amounts, or you cannot give them less. You can just fund it or not fund it. So, any questions that you have to answer them?
Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I move to approve Lodging Tax Advisory Committee recommendations for 2015 lodging tax grant.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for waiting
for a long
things
time
out.
Yeah.
Could have moved that up. I'm sorry.
Could have told you the outcome of that one.
I'm going to take the moment. You all continue to do a great job at the chamber. You painted a smokestack that stood gray for 70 years. You keep doing things in the downtown, everything from bringing Santa here to doing events like the Polar Plunge. I thank you for all the great work that you're doing. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you.
Okay, we're going to now move on to...
Just bump. Bye now.
Bye
now.
Run.
Bye-bye.
All right, final action number 4, AB 14-177. Nope, we've already done that one. Oh, no, I was right. Okay, ordinance number 019-2014, amending the 2014 budget. Final reading. Diane.
No change from the first reading. Okay.
All right, Councilmember Gamble.
Move to adopt ordinance number 019-2014, amending the budget for fiscal year 2014 to account for new revenues and expenditures, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Gamble, second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Next item on the agenda is final action number 5, AB 14-178, authorize the mayor to sign an addendum to the public defense agreements. And who has this? Chief? Nope. Oh, Ms. Smoot.
She may have mentioned this last week as we were talking about the budget amendments to 2014 that you just approved, that some of those monies were bumping up our public defender court-appointed attorney budget section. We did approve new contracts that increased those prices back in September. And there were certain case counts that were allotted for within those contracts, and the demand is higher than that. And so now these addendums just allow for them to continue providing services above those original numbers that we have already budgeted, and now these addendums allowing for them to continue with their numbers. That's pretty much it. Any questions on that?
Okay, I don't know if there are any questions, but Councilmember Hanford.
I'll move to authorize the mayor to sign the addendum to the public defense agreements with Ms. Amy True and Mr. Chris Griffin.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gehring. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Next one is final action number 6, AB 14-179, ordinance number 020-2014, amending MMC 8.04, animal control, final reading. Chief.
After intense discussion last week on this matter, on this IAM's technique, and there are no changes from last
week. Councilmember Rasmussen?
Make a motion to adopt ordinance number 020-2014, amending Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 8.04, animal control relating to the definition of dangerous dogs and certificates of registration for dangerous dogs, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 7-0. Next one is final action number 7, AB 14-180, ordinance number 021-2014, amending Parks Board and Planning Commission terms, final reading. Who has this?
It's Gene.
Okay, we had a presentation on this last week. Councilmember Gearing.
Thanks. I move to adopt ordinance number 021-2014, amending term limit requirements for the Monroe Parks Board and Monroe Planning Commission as defined in chapters 2.16 and 2.32 of the Monroe Municipal Code to address partial terms served, providing for severability and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Second.
First from Councilmember Gearing, second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Councilmember reports. Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. Looking forward to University of Nebraska versus University of Washington volleyball Friday night in the NCAA regionals.
Mm.
Thank you. And also a great time. All the stuff for the holidays in Monroe, tree lighting, the whole bit. Awesome. Love this time of year. Thank you.
Good. Councilmember Gamble.
No report.
Councilmember Davis.
Myself and the family were at the tree lighting Saturday night. Had a great time. Stood there and talked to the mayor for hours and hours.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was a lot of fun,
yep.
And it's good to see that kind of thing, and look forward to next year.
So, absolutely. Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Same. It was nice talking to the mayor. I'm going on the tour of the city Saturday afternoon. I missed the tree lighting, but I'm sure it went well. Brandon Hirano says hello. He's doing well at school. And I suggested he stop by and say hello to us in person. And I believe that's about it.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Yes, excellent time at tree lighting. Saw the bonfire, no Bon Jovi. However, the mayor did carry a good tune and along with Santa Claus. So, hey. it worked out, but it was a great night. I'm sure Mike's going to comment on it, but the snow machine, huge hit. So it was great to see everyone, and I'll comment on P4 afterwards if you want. Or
let's make it to the end, and then we'll hit those two. Councilmember Cutterback.
Who saw Mr. Dizzy? I'm just curious. You saw him. I missed him.
Yeah, Mike had the video.
I've got him on video.
Online.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let me see it.
Yeah, he actually.
Yeah, I saw it on Facebook.
The human.
Yeah, it was really cool. I'll show you after the meeting. Councilmember Cutterback. No report. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. I went to the Affordable Housing Forum last Thursday morning in Everett. That was very interesting. I don't have my Christmas cards for you tonight. And I won't be here next week, so I will be dropping them off in your boxes.
Oh, there we go.
This okay. week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and do the two committee reports. P4 committee.
Just me and Brad and Gene yesterday. So I guess technically there really wasn't a meeting, but there was a good discussion regarding control measures, and specifically the comments we've heard of up in the footnotes, and then the pedestrian flags. So Brad brought some great information on that, and you know, hopefully if the other community members are up for it, you know, bring it back next month, and so you guys can get in on it. But with the traffic calming measures or speed humps, stop signs, whatever, you know, we're looking at, you know, the discussion still remains of do we have a criteria and or if we establish a criteria, you know, how much are we held to it and so forth like that. And Brad had been doing some research on, you know, kind of where our liability and so forth like that was, and wasn't able to get answers by the time of our meeting, correct, Brad? It's kind of where we're at. So as it comes back to committee next month, very possibly. And then kind of the last addition was the pedestrian flags was added to the P4 discussion.
That had come from a request. Former Mayor Law's wife had met me at his memorial and had brought up the interest in having orange flags like they have in downtown Duval for crossing the streets in the downtown. So that I'd ask that that be added to the committee for discussion. So anyway, please continue.
So we did talk about it. I'll ask to bring it back next month to talk about some more. But what I took from the discussion was there's no big benefit to it that we found. You looked at Seattle and Kirkland, correct?
Correct.
Outside of that, I think the other point I took was that Kirkland loses 0 to 5 flags per week. So
per intersection.
Cool. So yeah, big. Other than that, that was sort of our conversation. The one thing I forgot to bring up before, but then also our councilman report, something that may be relevant to the committee, but also the rest of the council. The bus routes are changing, that notice from community transit a while ago. Specifically, it looks like they're eliminating the Village Way route that takes by the library and so forth. December 11th is when they are having community transit having an open comments on it. I can pull it. I'll pull it up and get it to you.
Thank you.
But short notice, maybe worth looking into. Public hearing overall is next month, so.
Okay. Thank you. That's it. Legislative Affairs Committee.
Yeah, we talked about the 2015 legislative priorities to go and speak with Senator Pearson about. The six items that we've talked about in the past, the US 2 Mineral Bypass Project, we thought, and this is all for us to discuss in the future, but we thought if we, the city, could have access to or possess phase 1 and phase 2 portions for development. The connection of 191st Avenue to the Galaxy Way, we thought we should ask for permission to go ahead and finish that off. For the pedestrian crossing at Highway 2 and State Route 522 on-ramp, we wanted to ask the chief about how, for his thoughts in the future about how to improve that area, possibly. Regarding the coal trains, we're waiting on Gene to get what Marysville is proposing, what they're doing up there. The fifth item, the liquor tax revenues, we wanted to ask for our share and find out AWC's position on the tax. So that'll be in the future as well. And for the last thing is a streamlined sales tax, and we would ask for that they would repeal it. So that's pretty much the report.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for either committee? I should have asked for P4. All right. Seeing none, let's go on up to staff. We'll start with Mike.
Thank you. So I was the absent snow miser at the Mill Street Fund. A couple things. One, I met with Neil Watkins, the director of the Skyline Life Food Bank, regarding the community food drive that he's planning for March. And vision is that we would have several locations throughout the city, key businesses and entities, organizations that would sign up for this. Then there'd be several drop-off points for the community for food to collect for the food bank, and that'd be great because it'd be a nice tool with several locations. They're all marketing this, and getting the attention of our citizens that pay this food tracks going on. So, anyways, we are going to be meeting the first week of January. Neil, myself, and Una from the Chamber of Commerce to then create. Plan the event. So, and then I know Neil is scheduled to speak to the council. I believe maybe the second or third meeting in January. So, could you get an update on what we're going through it? So, the other thing I want to tell you is that for the second straight year, the Monroe Fred Meyer store, they donated a whole bunch of tulip bulbs and daffodil bulbs to the city, to the parks. We have inventory of them all, but I would estimate that the donation value of that is over $1,000. So we'll be installing bulbs in park entries and streetscapes, some nice bulbs and then flower pots downtown. I guess on a related note, downtown, the flower pots that we have ordered, the flower pots that are being paid for and donated by Public Services, I just received word this week that we should be expecting to receive them in a couple of weeks, so by the end of the year. And then our plan is to have them out on Main Street, and hopefully we'll have some bulbs and flowers and all that in the spring.
That's good. Thank you, Mike. Councilmember Camp may have a question.
Thank you. I'm just curious, do we have a recurrent or a some kind of special thank you for recurring?
Yes.
Things like that. I yes. haven't heard of anything.
Yeah, what happened?
I don't have to talk about it tonight. Just if we could bring it next week or something, so I know.
Yeah, we do. They do thank you letters. They send it to me, and then I sign it and send it out. Is that what you're talking about?
Okay, yes. I just yes. was curious if we had something like that.
All right.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Ben.
We did interviews last week for the managing engineer, which will help the design and construction manager for Brad's position, and we're waiting for the budget for what was going to make the selection out of the budget. So Brad will get some help. We know he's busy, and we'll be able to bring some.
And on the HR front, then we will do a publishing for the community development director position as soon as we can, which will probably be in the next couple days to the early part of next week. So we'll discuss that on Thursday to make certain that that's moving along. Okay, any questions for Ben? Okay. Diane? Okay. You got an approved budget? Chief? You've had a busier week.
Well, we won't go into that.
Yeah. Okay.
Today was a graduation for Officer Trevor Larson. I attended that down in Uriga. I sent an email out to the council members and mayor reference Officer Brutus. Retired Officer Brutus passed away, and he was assigned to Sergeant Wayne Murray, who was the first drug dog that the city of Monroe had. And lastly, calls for service are increasing in Monroe at a dramatic rate. And some of it's the time of year, some of it's, I think, there's a lot more traffic that comes through Monroe this year than there has been the last couple of years. So that's
thank you. Any questions for Chief? Okay. Brad?
A couple of things. Is the Lewis Street stormwater project, and we'll hit a main two, that is coming up on Thursday at the Mason Lodge from 5 to 9 p.m. open house. So we don't have to like it there. The meeting, very meeting, you can stay all 4 hours if you don't want to, but you can if you'd like to.
Are you sending
a couple of road closures? What?
Are you going to send out an email to them?
You should have all received that already.
Oops.
You should have a newsflash about that.
We'll double check. Thank you.
Okay. That goes to that one. Did you just make sure? And road closures, the roundabout at the Washington State Department of Transportation is building through Scarcella construction is going to be closed starting Friday night until Monday morning, and also the other end of Main Street for the railroad track replacement will be closed Friday night to Monday morning.
So, what time Friday night?
11. So,
okay.
3:30.
Thank you. Thinking of my commute. Yeah, 3:30 would be perfect.
And we also have the project updates for all the public works projects we're working on. If you have any questions, you can send me an email or something. Give me a call.
Anybody have any questions for Brad this evening? All right. We'll do that in just a second. So for me, last week, you know, it was a really busy week. I know a couple of you were there for the Walmart ribbon cutting. There were a number of people there, and I've been back to Walmart once or twice, and there are a lot of people there shopping. The parking area is really full, which is good. Let me see. We'll come back to that for the extended agenda. One question that I do have, so of course we had the tree lighting ceremony on Saturday, which included for me having an interview on the radio with Stitch and Morley, I think. So the radio was there, and that was good. We had a lot of people come to the event, lit the lights, gave Santa a ride back to the fire district. I also walked around the downtown just to stop in with a couple of the businesses in the downtown. The businesses that I did go in and speak to said that they had an uptick in at least people looking. The place that that takes care of dogs, the dog grooming place, Angels Among Us, had actually an increase in people bringing dogs by to have toenails and things like that done. So they thought that maybe people had come, you know, and brought their dog down and mm-hmm. decided to pretty the dog up and then take them back out. There was only one business that said that they didn't see an uptick that I visited, and that was the arcade. But I know that there were kids that got tired of the snow machine and the bonfires and went up there to play at the arcade. So I spoke to at least two parents that said that. Mr. Dizzy did light himself on fire. I'd be happy to share that video with you. He is fine, so that's good. Question for you: last week there was some discussion about the school board and the school bond that's coming up this year. I understand that the school board voted on that. I think it was last night. And last year we did a resolution in support of the technology levy. Would council be interested in doing something similar to that this year? I'm seeing heads nod up and down.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll put that on the extended agenda as a to be determined. We'll just set it for January 20th right now, TBD, and we'll determine when the best time is to do that. Remember, there was a public hearing component of it and all that other stuff. So one other item that I have a question for that is sort of extended agenda related. There are some jurisdictions that will have goals retreats. I know that there's been discussion in the past about not being interested in doing that. Does this council have an interest in doing a retreat or a focus in a regular council meeting to discuss goals for 2015? Is there an interest in doing that? It would be probably late January or early February. Okay. Okay, I'm hearing one yes. I'm seeing a couple nods up and down.
It'd be nice to have a discussion about goals.
Okay, so I'm going to put that down as a 60% yes, maybe 70% yes. I'll go ahead and discuss that with staff. Would you prefer to do it on a regular council night? Or
yes.
Would you, I hear one definitive yes. Okay, I'm seeing head nod up and down. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll come back and we'll put that on an agenda for January 6th through the 13th to discuss having a goals meeting, and then we'll schedule it from there. So if everybody could kind of think through what you'd like to do in terms of goals, and we'll go ahead and discuss that. We'll put the transportation mitigation fees onto the extended agenda and have a discussion on that for sometime in mid-January. Yes. Yeah. All right. And now what I'm going to do is, since Gene is pinch-hitting for... Brad is pinch-hitting for Gene.
I thought you were going to do it, sorry.
Let's go for it.
Okay. The December 16th regular council meeting, we have a presentation from the Borough Chamber of Commerce, consent agenda, approval of minutes, paychecks, and things like that. Approve resolution setting the 2015 fees. Accept a grant for the Woods Creek Road North Purpose Path and the sidewalks on Main Street. And authorize the mayor to do a change order for the wastewater treatment plant energy conservation projects. Unfinished business, we'll discuss marijuana buffers, discuss elected official term limits, and new business, set a resolution amending the fixed asset policies for the small and attractive items, as opposed to the large and ugly ones. The authorized mayor to sign the police bill contract, authorized mayor to sign the 2015 public defender services contract, and authorized mayor to sign an addendum to contract prosecution services, and final action of amending the host rezone, which you had the first reading on today.
Okay. Any discussion on the consent agenda? I do see two lights. Councilmember Gearing.
Thanks. Moving consent agenda, item number 3 to unfinished business. And Councilmember Hanford will be out next week, and I don't think the term limits thing is pressing. If we can move that to January, some date in January that you deem appropriate, that'd be great. As we need Gene to provide an update, he's not here. It's not something that we need for next week. If we could do it in one of the first weeks in January for after we have an update.
Okay. We'll go ahead and we'll move that to
sure.
A meeting where we have an attorney present. Actually, we'll just move it to a meeting in January.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll go ahead and we'll move the elected official term limits to a meeting in January. All right. Anything else on the agenda for next week? All right. Oh, Councilmember Hanford?
Not for next week, but I wanted to move to council business meeting for December 23rd, 2014.
Okay. I have a first from Councilmember Hanford to cancel the 23rd.
Second.
I have a second from Councilmember Gamble to cancel the 23rd. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so motion passes 6-1 with Councilmember Gearing voting against. Is there any other discussion on the extended agenda? Okay, seeing none, I entertain a motion for Councilmember Gamble.
Just a reminder, I will be out of the state on January 13th. So
Councilmember Gamble will be out of state on January 13th.
Oops, good.
Okay, Councilmember Hanford?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Yeah, a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
9:59.
Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We are adjourned.
Son of a gun.
9:59.
Perfect. Just in time.
Made it.
10, 9:59, man.
We are not going to extend.